Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Before I get started, I think it's important that the audience listening out there understands the reasoning behind Jail Talk. When given this opportunity by a great friend and brother of mine named Suave, who will be on FI today talking about death by incarceration, CBI Live, I had been saying for some time now we needed a platform and an outlet to have conversations related to what's taking place with the prison system. The effect that it has on all parties impacted by the system, such as those who are survivors of violence, individuals incarcerated, families, and communities. My goal is bringing more awareness to the side effects of prison and helping those who aren't aware to become educated, because this can happen to anyone. In today's discussion, I want to give space to three beautiful women, independent women who have it going on, but most importantly are holding down a relationship with someone who's currently incarcerated. I have as our guest today Chanel, Tasha, and Val. So my main question is, starting with Chanel, what I would like to know, just like many others out there, is how did this love story begin?
Thank you so much, Christina. Hello, everyone. My name is Chanel. I have been with ANWR for 8 years. ANWR is currently incarcerated as a juvenile lifer. So I would just break, I'm going to break down how we met. Me and ANWR came about through a family member. ANWR is incarcerated with, he was incarcerated at that time with my cousin. I had just lost my father and I was going through really deep depression. And my cousin thought it was best that I would talk to someone. When I spoke with, my cousin felt that I was, he wanted me to talk to someone. So he randomly gave ANWR my number. I had no idea who ANWR was. ANWR would constantly call me and I would be extremely rude to him. And so one day I finally gave it a chance and here we are 8 years later.
Wow, 8 years later. So that's one hell of a story right there. Yeah. How have you been navigating those 8 years?
Well, Christina, it's not easy. I think any relationship that long isn't easy, whether incarcerated or, not. However, I feel like we're best friends and we're also in love. That just makes the process much more easier. We tell each other absolutely everything. Even in our most vulnerable moments, we share that with one another. ANWR is my best friend. I'm his best friend. And I just think that the love we have for each other on top of that, it just creates a really great dynamic. And it helped us get through these 8 years like a breeze.
So with ANWR, I know ANWR's going to be coming home pretty soon. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm very excited. I mean, we have been through an extremely tough time. I can't imagine going through this again, but we've been through a lot of ups and downs, me and ANWR. Not easy, but I'm really excited about his release. Really looking forward to it. Planning, the planning has been extremely fun, and I just can't wait to the day where I can finally get to pick him up.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Now, Tasha, I know that you just recently got married with your husband, and right now I know you're currently like in the honeymoon phase of everything. I remember actually seeing the day that you got married, and I thought that was beautiful, honestly, especially because when you go into prison, sometimes the environment is not always the best, but to just see some type of love coming out of that environment was beautiful to be a witness of. And I just want to know, how have you been navigating that, you know, being in that honeymoon phase with your husband?
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Tasha. Navigating that situation, well, me and my husband, we're a live wire. We're very outspoken people. And so we tend to make the best of that situation. We're an open book. We're both Leo, so that really sets it off. We're both the same time, so that really, we're really compatible. So there's no shyness with us. So when it comes to the business, we are all the way lit. We're all the way lit. Like, everybody loves us because we're lit. Like, we're just so outspoken. You know, the day we got married, we were going to do the ceremony private. Like, we wanted to stand up to the side. We were trying to pick a little spot where we wanted to stand there to get married. And it was like, so she was so live, and I came here so beautiful, so dressed up. Everybody wanted to be a part of it. It was like people in the visiting room, we didn't even know these people. They're like, well, can we see it too? So we moved to the side so everybody could see us, And with us being that type of couple, that's what makes it so good for us. Like, we're still honeymooning. Like, the visits, the virtual visits, oh man, they're the bomb. Because my husband loves for me to be dressed up and everything. So I'm always dressed up when it comes to the visits. I always get dolled up, always time things. And I'm always cute every time. I even dance for my husband. I do all that. So that's how I kind of keep that thing live. We're always going to be in the honeymoon stage. When it comes to me and him, we're always going to be in the honeymoon stage. And then I just want to share one more thing as well. When we were about to do our ceremony, we were sitting down with my pastor, because my pastor came in. My pastor's from Philly.
Oh, really?
And my pastor's from Philly, so if I can get a shout out to him, Elder Reginald Freistand. Yeah, he's from Philly. But he traveled to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to do service. He's been doing that for 20-some years. And he took time out of his busy schedule and came to the jail to do our ceremony. When he sat down with us, if I could share something with y'all, when he came to do the ceremony with us, he talked about how beautiful I was. He said, look at your wife, Ronald. He said, she looks like a queen, And he said, like, something off Coming to America. So my husband started singing this song, if I could share it with y'all.
Okay, let me share the song.
Okay. I love it. Yes, we heard it. And
so he sung that to me. He sung that to me, right? As soon as the pastor said that she looked like a queen of the Coming to America, he sung that to me. The pastor was like, he said, shut up, Ronald.
Can I just say one thing about the relationship? Is like, I know women are in the situation right now with dating someone who's incarcerated, but you're also finding love in a hopeless place too for the men, because they're somewhere where they can't go out and look for a date or just find anybody. So it's like they find people in different ways, and sometimes it's just beautiful seeing what that develops into. And even with the fact that you talked about being married and everything, that process is very tedious. Can you elaborate a little bit on how that was for you and for Ronnie?
Oh man, it was a handful. It was a lot. It was a whole lot. It was a whole lot to even get to that. You know, I had to, it was like a whole bunch of back and forth with having to call the jail and speaking to counselors and trying to get things done. But, you know, one thing I can say about it being, you know, being tedious and all that, one thing I can say is, you know, things that are good are worth fighting for. You know, them things that you have to go through the most for to get is the things that you need to hold on to. Because anything that comes easy, you ain't going to cherish that because it was too easy to get that. Like, you don't easily go get something. You're not really going to cherish it. But them things that you had to work so hard for to get, those are the things you're going to cherish. And especially as far as marriage is concerned. Because marriage is a fight. You know, it's not always a fairy tale. It ain't always a Cinderella thing. No, it's not that. Marriage, it takes work. You know, and that's why you'll cherish some things more. You know, me and him, with him being incarcerated, me being out here, and then, and I always told him, you know, him being in jail, and we did it that way, you would appreciate some things more. Because it's more easier for a man to get a woman, or for me to get a man out here. But the true challenge is you have somebody that's going to be there with you while you're at your lowest point in life.
Yeah, and I believe that too, because I feel like that's the truth. You don't want somebody around when everything is all good, but when things are like very challenging and you're like at a point where you're more vulnerable. And that kind of goes into my next set of questions, because we have Valerie, and Valerie, you know, your situation is completely different than Tasha's and Chanel. And I guess I want to kind of hear where your story began.
Yeah, hey everyone. So I'm Val, and I really appreciate everything that everybody said, because there are definitely things like what you just said.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah, can you all hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I'm gonna get Val back on. We were having a technical issue. Give me 1 second.
Hello, Val, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Christina? Let me text and say.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Val to get back on.
Hey, I'm here.
Oh, you there? Okay, perfect. I'm like, where is she at?
I don't know what happened, but I'm back.
Do you have everybody on the call now?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
Yo, thank you so much for answering and patching me back in.
Perfect.
So, yeah, I was just saying that I really relate to a lot of what everybody said so far. And so I met Jihad when I was living in D.C. as a journalist. I was working for Solitary Watch. And so I communicated with people in solitary confinement across the country. And I met him through organizing. He was a part of the Vaughn 17, which is a group alleged to have been involved in an incident in Delaware that began as a peaceful protest against the torture of solitary confinement, and then prison guards escalated the situation through excessive force and brutality, and so they all got sent to Pennsylvania to get locked down. So he was on the restricted release list, which is a list of people in Pennsylvania who are indefinitely sentenced to solitary confinement. I just want to say that's undeniably torture, period, first of all. But at the time, he had no contact visits, only a few video visits a month, and like 3 or 4 calls a week. And that's actually the situation that he's still in right now. And so we had a video visit with some organizers in D.C. There's a few of us on the call, and that's how I met him, through them. And after the visit, he sent me an email. He was like, I don't consider that our first visit together, since we didn't have any time to kick it alone. I was like, okay, I see you. I'm going to set up a visit. And it was February at that time, so he had sent me the Bell Hooks book, Feminism is for Everybody, for Valentine's Day, which is literally the best Valentine's gift that anybody could ever get me. And he had just gotten approved to get released from that restrictive release list. So they signed off on all the paperwork. He was going to finally be out of solitary after 18 years. He was going to get contact visits. The restrictions would be lifted on his calls and visits. And
Val, you just said 18 years?
18 years.
That he was in solitary confinement?
Yep. That's right.
Wow. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
The United Nations has determined that 15 days in solitary confinement is torture, just as a side note. But anyway, so the day before our first video visit together, without giving any reason, instead of transferring him to the general population, they took him and transferred him to the opposite side of the state and threw him into even heavier lockdown solitary confinement, put him back on the restricted release list. So he called me that day and he said, V, our visit is off. They transferred me to Green and put me back in solitary. Well, not back. He was never really out, but put him into deeper solitary confinement. And I was just, my mind was blown, because I was like so excited for him to finally get out. You know, after 18 years, he was going to be able to touch his family and have like unrestricted visits. Well, relatively unrestricted. And they just snatched him away, and selfishly, they took my visit.
And oh my God.
That was the first time that I really felt it personally, the impact of this system. Like, I have so many friendships with people across the country in solitary confinement, but this was like, you really took that from me. And so, yeah, it was around that time that our relationship began deepening.
I have a question for you, Val. I know what your situation currently. Neither of you have been able to see each other physically. Like, how has that been? Like, how have you been able to keep that relationship strong? Because, number one, you just mentioned he's been in solitary confinement for 18 years. That's long as hell. And for people who are not aware, solitary confinement, there's even more restrictions than just the person being in regular population. So that means less time on the phone, less time out of your cell, and it just really, really breaks the connection that you have with your families when you're in those situations. So how do you maintain that relationship and keeping it strong?
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge. And it's challenged me to grow in a lot of ways, honestly, because especially him having been involved in that situation in Delaware, like, they monitor every single thing, every single part of his communication. So when he got transferred out there, and this was true before too, but our communication was primarily through emails, but especially when he first got transferred out there, like, they would read every single email and hold it for a week to 10 days. And that was hard for me. That really forced me to step up my patience, because and accept that, you know, this isn't him ignoring me. This is the system just doing what it does, designed to break people. But I just want to give him all the credit for the strength of the foundation of our relationship, because from day one, he was unapologetically intentional about centering our friendship. And he was determined to let nothing come between our friendship. And that has remained the rock solid foundation for our bond. So, you know, as we said, he's been a solitary for almost 2 decades. And so he's seen during that time, time and time again, the way that this system is designed and to destroy the most genuine and deep bonds between incarcerated people and their loved ones from so many different angles. And from the jump, and I was kind of resistant to this, but he was like, over everything is our friendship. Like the romantic, the sexual, everything is beautiful and I love it, but it's our friendship. So he was like, the labels, the titles, all the promises, that's what boxes you in. And that's what puts a level of pressure on us that makes us vulnerable to the system chipping away at our love and tearing us apart. And so, yeah, it's helped us create a space where we can really be ourselves and we have complete unfettered honesty about everything in our lives. And that's not only allowed, but that's the expectation that comes before everything. So
I think I love it. I love it.
The communication, I think, is how is the strength of our relationship. And I think that that's the hardest thing in a relationship, period, whether it's inside or outside. I think it was Tasha talking about this. But like the most vulnerable things about you, like it's hard to tell somebody embarrassing shit. It's hard to tell somebody that you made a mistake. It's hard to tell somebody something that you think might hurt them. And it's hard to see things from another person's perspective, like when you might be triggered from your own past. But if you set up a way to communicate with a person that there's no judgment and you can just be yourself, then that creates a bond that is, in my opinion, unbreakable.
I definitely agree with you. And that kind of leads me into my next set of questions with you ladies. And I guess we can kind of like chime in a little at a time, but I did want to know, like, do you ladies think there is a stigma when dating someone incarcerated? Because I hear all the time, like, you know, why is it that you want to be with someone incarcerated opposed to someone who's outside of prison, you know, that can cater to you in a different way, maybe buy you some flowers, take you on a date, and you can lay in that bed with. So I just want to know, do you ladies think there's a stigma when dating someone who's incarcerated? And I know we don't have any men on this show today, but, you know, I do want to see what men also think about this if they're dating a woman who's incarcerated, because a lot of times you go into these prisons and you go into the visiting rooms, but they're always filled up with women 90% of the time compared to men. So I guess I'm a piggyback and give it to Chanel, and you can give me an answer to that.
Absolutely. Of course there is a stigmatism. I think that, you know, people tend to think that when women date men who are incarcerated or vice versa, that there's a sense of desperation or there's a sense of you're lacking something which you can't get out here and which you feel like you can get inside of the prison system. But that's not always true. And to be transparent, that does happen. There are women and men who seek validation and love inside of the, you know, the prison system. However, there's also a flip side to that coin. And you do have people like me and the other ladies who relationships fell in their lap. My relationship fell in my lap. I, like I said earlier, you know, I gave Anwar the hardest time. I would hang up on him. I was not interested. I was actually angry at my cousin for giving him my number. Like, what the hell are you doing? And literally, just one day, like I said, I was having a tough time about losing my father, and I answered, and I finally spoke to him. And one thing I loved about, I can't speak for everybody, but one thing I love about my relationship is that he never pressed a relationship out of me. There was no, like Val said, there was no title, there was no nothing. We just focused on a friendship, and he was just there for me. He was like, he became my best friend. And we became vulnerable to one another. We would talk about everything, whatever thought. I mean, it got to the point where we talked about what type of sanitary napkins or, you know, tampons I use. I mean, it just got that deep. He really became my best friend. And then love came. And then I like to think we're two very extremely attractive people. And, you know, once we saw each other, you know, it was like, wow, you know, and then it was kind of like, it just took off from there. But on the flip side, there are women who seek love and validation in prison. And you know what? They deserve love. No shade to them either, even if that's how they got it. I just hope that when women or men do seek love inside of prison, they understand that the risk that they're taking. We're all taking a risk here. However, I hope when they do it purposely for love and validation, that they are aware of the outcome. One thing about me, I'm very conscious of my outcome because I did meet Anwar in prison. So I don't know the Anwar on the outside. I only know the Anwar who I met who was incarcerated. So I think we're all taking a gamble. But I feel the same way if you met somebody in the gas station. You're still taking a gamble. The only difference is that there's no sex.
Yeah. Can I just say to you women are all amazing. Like, you guys are not only independent and self-made, you know, the thing about you ladies that I really admire is the fact that you guys are advocating for the men that you are with that are incarcerated. And it's not like you're in a relationship where it's like an insecure woman who wants to be with a man that's in prison because she knows where he's at and she knows what he's doing. And, you know, we have women that are like that. And then the minute that their men are about to come out, they're almost like feeling some type of way because they're about to be free. And I know each one of you ladies has been fighting for your significant other to come home. Now, Tasha, how do you feel about that? Have you gotten any type of like responses from like family or friends because you're married and your husband is incarcerated? And have you received the support?
Well, my family supports it. One, I'm going to say 90% out of 100%, they've supported because I've already been down this road before with being with a man that was incarcerated. And unfortunately, that situation did not work out the way I thought it was going to work out. So I was kind of vulnerable. Just, you know, with my husband, Ronnie now, I was vulnerable. Like, I didn't trust it. I told myself, I ain't doing this again, you know. But, you know, the thing that drew me most to him and made me say, okay, I'm going to do it again, was God. The point was the fact that this man was already into God.
Wow. That's what caught my
attention. You know, when me and him first started communicating, when he wrote me an email, we got connected through a mutual friend that we grew up with. And when he first wrote me an email, he talked about God. And that's what caught my attention. You know, it's people always talk about, oh, why would you want somebody that's in prison and you get you a man out here in the streets? And in my opinion on that, you can still get a man on the streets that ain't nothing. You know?
You're right about that. You're so right about that. You know, I was thinking about a conversation that I was having with you, Chanel, earlier in the day. We were kind of like talking about love and lockup. And I was just kind of saying how, you know, we got these shows that are reality shows, but they really don't depict like the hard things, the good things that people kind of experience with a person that is incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And I had a question for Val because I just wanted to know, like, with your situation, I know that you and me kind of, we went to Egypt, and I remember you were writing and trying to get in communication with Jihad as much as possible. Like, how do you and him like find ways to give each other reminders when sometimes it's not always a thing that you can do so often? And also, when are you going to see Jihad? Because I think I really want to know that, and everybody else.
I'm dying for that moment. I have so many like images in my head of how this is going to go down. But September is when, so yeah, he's finally going to get out of solitary confinement after 18 years, which is a huge fucking deal. And I'm so excited, not just that I'm going to meet him, but that he's going to be finally out of that extreme, like severely torturous situation. And so in September, he's going to get transferred to general population, and we're finally going to have our first in-person visit.
Oh my God, girl. I'm like so excited for you, you hear me? Because I know that everybody in this space knows what that feels like. But I know that when you see him and he sees you, you both are going to be smiling ear to ear. Because
that guy, no.
Yeah. So ladies, one question that I did have was like, how has your significant other added value into your life? And the reason why, you know, I ask that question is because at times people on the outside feel like those individuals that are incarcerated are taking away from the relationship, because a lot of people don't feel like it's a 50-50 relationship. So how has that individual added value into your life? And I'll start with you, Chanel.
Well, this is my opinion. They're not 50-50, in my opinion. My relationship is not 50-50. However, what Anwar contributes to me, I would say, is emotional and mental support. He always has my back. I know that whatever goes on, whatever I'm going through in life, I know that when I get that phone call and I see, you know, when I get that phone call, when I hear that recording, instantly I feel like everything's going to be all right. He's like my coach. It's like the only way I can describe it is like I'm in the game and he's my coach. And I love it because it helps us build such a bond. And we're such a team that, you know, I'll be out here excelling. Like, I'll give you an example. When I was at work, I wanted to go for this promotion. And I'm like, I don't think I can do it. I instantly doubted myself. And we're like, you should apply. No, you're going to apply. Like, he was just on my back about it. Did you put the application in? And I did, and I got the promotion. I would have never gotten the promotion if it wasn't for him talking me into it. And I always tell him that the woman that you see today, because we met almost 8 years ago, but the woman that you see today, who she's become, you definitely were a part of that. And he was. That's what I'm talking about. That's the coach. You know what I'm saying? My baby.
Yes, yeah, I love it. How about you, Tasha?
Well, I'm gonna say our relationship, I'm gonna say our relationship, our marriage is 50-50. Because my husband contributes to everything, and I'm gonna say that is because before we got married, when he proposed to me, he was so adamant about making sure that I had a ring. He made sure I had a ring. Yeah, like I got a ring, a diamond ring on my finger right now.
Yeah,
like,
that ring is beautiful.
Yeah, and so they ain't no, listen, I ain't bragging or boasting, but that ring, my wedding ring right now, that came from K Jewelers. No, it ain't no Walmart special.
That's what I'm talking about. That ring is lovely.
Yeah, like it's 50-50. And the reason why I say that is because my husband, he prays for me. And we pray together. You know, and that's what made us come together. Because that man, I got his prayer right now, and he prayed. Like probably like 12 years ago, 13 years ago maybe, he prayed. He went out of prayer to God and asked God to send him a wife while he was in there. And God sent him me. He is my best friend. He is my motivation. I am his motivation. So this thing between me and him is 50-50 to me. That is my dog. That is my best friend. Literally so. Like, I'm so vulnerable with him. Like, I can tell him anything. He can tell me anything. Like, man, yeah, he my 50-50. No, he my 100-100.
Yeah, I love it. How about you, Val? What you thinking about it? Like, do you feel like it's 50-50? Do you feel like it's less than that? Tell me.
I think it's definitely 50-50. Like, I'm trying to catch up with him, to be honest. And for me, like, and I've been in relationships where it's been flipped, where I'm like, yeah, this person I don't think is, like, they love me, but they're not really willing to put the work in. He puts the work in to this relationship. And he knows everything about me. Like, definitely, what y'all are saying, he's my best friend, hands down. And he knows everything that I need to work on to be the person that I want to be. And so he pushes me in every way to be the best version of myself. And he gives me, like, I deal with depression and just regular struggles in life, financial, work, you know. And he gives me a space to think through anything and everything that I need to think through in my life, and pushes me and helps me to grow in a way that's not judgmental, but, like, truly uplifting. One time I was crying about something, and it was, like, I really, my depression, I think, escalated when I was in Palestine, when I came back from Palestine, and I experienced a lot of things over there. Someone had gotten shot. Anyway, so, but coming back, it's like, when I see things going on over there, which is all the time, sometimes it can really affect me. And so I sent him a message. I was like, yo, I don't know why I'm crying about this. And it was actually someone that they were holding in solitary confinement. And he was in there, and he was on hunger strike for 188 days. And I saw a video of him talking to his daughter, and I was just crying. And I was like, it's not useful to cry. You know, I don't know why I'm crying, blah, blah, blah. And he sent me a message back, and he was like, it's okay to cry. Like, that just shows how genuine your heart is. It's like things like that where it's like, makes me feel like it's okay to just be who I am, you know? And he helps me accept that and pushes me also. So it's like, he knows my goals and he knows my dreams, and he'll remind me. Like, the other day, he asked me, he called and he was like, so what's up with the feminist media group that you have been talking about? Where's that at? And I had forgotten about it, to be honest, because I got lost in my work and everything else going on in my life. I hadn't been thinking about it for weeks. And I was like, you're right. So it's things like that where he really, like, pays attention to everything and pushes me. And I'm not going to say I don't put in the work, because I definitely do put in the work on my end. But, yeah, I would say it's at least 50-50.
Can I chime in here for one moment, please?
Yeah.
Sure.
Christina, when you explain 50-50, right, uh-huh. You talk about, is your relationship 50-50? What do you mean?
Well, I wanted to know, do you feel like it's 50-50? Some people feel like they're giving more than what they're receiving, and that 50-50 can be like, it can be okay. With someone inside or out.
Hold on. Okay, one moment. Because I got to tap in here. I'm a realist, right? That's one thing about me. Because I'm really in real life that girl. And I'm just curious as to how could you possibly think that a person, and I'm not taking away because my man's incarcerated, but they're limited. He can't pay, well, maybe they can pay bills, I don't know. But I live in an expensive place. He can't pay my bills. He could be a good verbal support to me. But what? This is the question that I have. What do you all consider to be 50-50 in a relationship? Because I don't live in La La Land, and I'm not saying that any of you do either. But what do you consider 50-50 in a relationship when your man's incarcerated?
Well, some of the women feel like it's 50-50, but there's also some people that feel like because the person is incarcerated, the woman may be putting a little bit more out than the man that's incarcerated. But then you're hearing these opinions, and you're also hearing how this person is providing some type of, whether it's emotional support, whether it's, you know, financial support, because, I mean, there's ways to do things.
When your mate is locked up, what is 50-50? Like, that's my question. When someone's incarcerated, we're all women who are independent and who have careers and pretty great lives. What is 50-50 in your relationship? If a man was on the street and he weren't incarcerated, what would be your 50-50?
I mean, even if they're out here, sometimes it's not 50-50. I think that it's how much you put into the relationship that makes you feel like it's 50-50.
As far as what? Finances, emotional support? Because
it can be any of those.
Emotional support, verbal support, that's your teammate, that's your backbone, finances. So what makes a relationship 50-50? If a man is incarcerated, I'm really curious.
I think that's a question we're going to ask on the next episode.
Because I got a lot going on. He can't give me 50-50. I appreciate whatever he can give because that is my life partner and I love him and it's not his fault that he's limited. But I really want to tap into this because I want us to all understand that these men are incarcerated. So what could they give you that is 50-50?
I think for me, the question is, what does a person perceive as being 50-50 in a relationship? Because you have so many women, too.
So the question is, what do we perceive to be 50-50?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
And I just want to stress, too, the fact that some people, they have their own perceptions of 50-50. So they might feel like, how is this person financially holding you down? And it's the same thing with a woman who might be independent and or she might be a woman who wants a man to hold her down and is working and is paying all her bills. You know, that's not 50-50 to me. But it's, I guess, how the person perceives what's 50-50 to them in that relationship. Because I feel like what we're talking about is how these men have all added to us, you know, emotionally, being supportive, being able to communicate. And just like Val was saying, like how he mentioned something to her that probably she forgot about. And if she were talking to someone else, they probably weren't even paying attention. And one thing I do want to take note of is like, you know, the world we live in today compared to the men that we're dealing with. So like you have a man that's incarcerated that's going to give you all that attention. Or you may have a man out. Exactly. And then you might have a man out here that isn't.
What I want to make sure that I'm doing for these women and men, whoever's listening, is to represent what is real in this world. I've been in my relationship for 8 years. Of course they're going to listen. What else are they going to do?
Yeah, and at the same time, there are a lot of, like, I know people across the country who are locked up. A lot of them, yeah, they can listen, but it takes work to help someone through certain shit. And I feel like when we're talking about 50-50 in general, no matter what the situation is, it's understanding the circumstances and in the context of the circumstances that you're in, that person puts in as much as they can and that you put in as much as you can. That's 50-50. Because you might have, even on the outside, you can have a very, if you're a woman, you know what I mean? And
if you're doing a visit, if you are setting up the visit, do you keep phone time on the phone?
Wait, do you keep what?
You said if she puts phone time on the phone, you mean?
Do you schedule the visits? Well, you can't yet, but when you can, you'll be scheduling the visits. You're going to go see him?
Yeah, definitely.
You put the phone time on the phone?
Yep.
You don't think you just give a little bit more, which is nothing wrong with it. I think the moment we decided to be in these relationships, it was already understood that we were going to have to be somewhat of the muscle.
Yeah,
men hands are tied. I'm not stomping on anybody because, like I said, it's not their fault. But I do want to make sure as women, we give ourselves the round of applause because this is a lot.
No, I appreciate you for that.
And I think it is a lot. But
he cannot give me nearly what I can do for him as far as, like, you know, when they're dealing with those COs, they have those bad days, and they got to call us. And not only do we just come home from work or the gym or the doctor's office, we have to be there for them. And listen to them and comfort them. Well, we're dealing with life too.
Chanel, one of the things I'm, One of the things that I'm thinking about as you're saying that is the fact that, you know, everybody is kind of like, you got to meet them where they're at. And we got to remember, these individuals are incarcerated. So, again, they are not making wages. If anything, they're making coins. And, you know, it's kind of, I think that one of the things that, you know, it depends on the type of support that that person has. You might have somebody that only has that one person to really help them out. You might have someone who has that family support.
Let me be very clear. I'm not making the inmate the villain. I'm not saying that it's their fault that they're in their situation. What I'm saying is that us women need to give each other more credit when it comes to being there for these men that's incarcerated. I've been with my man for 8 years. I would die for him. He's tattooed on my chest. That is my life partner. But I'll make no mistake. I put more in because I have more to lose, and I put more in. It's not his fault. He's crippled. But I'm not going to take away from the fact that I got to, after this phone call, I have to get dressed and go to a visit. I just got off of work. I worked 2 jobs. How could that possibly be 50-50?
I got a question for you guys, right? Because you're talking about that, and it brings up a question that I was thinking about. You know, how do you balance living in the present with this individual, right, and preparing for the future? Because as you're saying, you're putting all this investment, and you feel as though you're putting more investment into this person, and it's been 8 years. You've been with this person for a really, really long time. Like, Anwal's been in your life for a minute. So I know with his situation, he does got an end date. He has a date where he's coming home to you. And right. Like, how are you preparing for that? Because we only know, like, the situation of the person that's in there while they're in there. But then what about when they come out? Like, do you feel like he's going to be the same person?
I don't know. And that's the thing about it. I know incarcerated Anwar. I don't know Anwar outside of prison. I don't know who Anwar is going to be. However, I have mentally prepared myself, and I'm not saying this in a negative way. I have mentally prepared myself for it to go either way because you don't know. You know, when they're in there, I don't think for a second they don't tell themselves, I'm going to do right by this woman. I'm going to come home. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But as we all know, life is hard. Life hits you. And so you have to be prepared for anything. Now, that's my best friend. And I'm going to have his back regardless. But I feel like my job is to support Anwar and whatever he wants to do. You know, whether, you know, he want to get a job at McDonald's, which we both know he's not, or whatever he wants to do. My job is just to be a mental support for him, to help him get readjusted back into life. And, you know, we'll figure it out from there. My only objective is to support him. He's going to have to reintegrate back into society. And I just want to be his backbone through that all. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not expecting a fairy tale wedding. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, I'm cool with the justice of the peace because that's what it's about for me. You know what I'm saying? But my only job is to make sure that my man's head is all right, his mental is there, and we could go from there.
Now, for Tasha, how do you feel about that question? Because I know your man is also going to be coming home too.
Yeah. Well, I figure it like this. The person that's real is just real all the way around the board, no matter if they in or if they out, to me. Because I always go through this question with my husband 1,000 times. And I ask him 1,000 times, how I know you're not going to switch up? How I know you're not going to be different when you come home? You know? And I get the same answer. He is who he is. So this is certain people that just ran all the way around the board. I mean, no matter what the circumstances are, you real, you real. It's all about being real. You know, like his counselor said, well, this is not the real life in here. And I'm like, shoot. Yeah, it is, because we still argue to go through what we're going to go through while he is there.
Definitely.
Period. Like, you can't fake that. You real, you real. You not. You know, I've been in this situation before, and when a man wasn't real. Like, he was still a little boy. He wasn't ready for that life. He couldn't keep it real. It's all about keeping it real. It's all about what you want in life, what you want to do. And it's also all about being a grown man, too. Because my husband's been down for 27 years, and he is who he is. You know, and everybody that knows him and talks about him, they always say, oh, he never changed. He's still the same person. He is who he is.
And one thing he is a man because he put that ring on that finger.
And that part right there, he put that ring on that finger. Yeah.
He put that ring on that finger. Now, Val.
Right.
Val, my next question for you is how do you feel with your situation? Because I know, like, one thing about you is you're a major advocate, and that's what I love about you, girl, because you holding it down. You holding the fort down. But how do you feel, like, in preparation? Because I know you're advocating for someone to come home, and you can kind of talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, definitely. So he's serving life. And to me, from the day I met him, I never questioned that he was coming home. Like, in my core, I have never felt like that man's not coming home. So, yes, on paper, he has a life sentence, but there are so many different reasons why I have no question that he's coming home. Part of that is because of the work that we're putting in. He does day and night, he's doing work on multiple cases of his. And so am I. But I think in regards to the future, and I've been learning about this with him through this process, like what really the process of manifestation looks like. And I think it's partially visualizing the future, and we do this all the time, just like, and naturally, it's not like we're trying to like think hard about what it's going to be like. Like, naturally, we just automatically think about and visualize being together and what that looks like in every way. And while that part of it, the other part of it is putting in the work. And I work with incarcerated people, so I've seen a lot of people come home, which is so beautiful and so, and gives me so much hope that more and more people are coming home. And what I, one thing I've noticed is that people are who they are. Just like Tasha was saying, if you're real, you're real. When you come home, you're going to be real. And like people are who they are on the inside, and they come home and that's who they are. If you're a womanizer on the inside, you're going to come home and be a womanizer. If you are power hungry on the inside, you're going to come home and be power hungry. If you're real on the inside and you come home, you're going to be real. And so I think it just like unleashes you to fully be the person that you are and fulfill your potential. Because when you're behind bars, there's so many restrictions on so many levels that in some ways, you know, when we're communicating with people, we can tell who they are. But when they come home, they really live that out. And so I just can't wait, really. I can't wait for him to come home.
So, ladies, I do have a question. I want you guys to tell me, like, what is it that caught your attention about this man? And I don't know who wants to go first, but maybe I'll go with you, Val, since you just finished.
Okay, cool. So to me, as I said, I was talking to a lot of people in solitary, and just not in solitary, but in prison across the country through my work. And sometimes, you know, I would do my best to get back to everybody, but what caught my attention about him is that he would call me out on shit. He would see little things that I do and be like, hey, I see you. I'd be like, yo, who do you think you are? And one time he called me, and this is embarrassing, but I'm just going to share it anyway. I was really hungry, and I had gotten food, and my friend was coming in from out of town. And I thought she was coming in later, but the timing just worked out how it worked out. And she hit me up, hey, I'm on your doorstep. I was like, oh, shit, I had just got my food. And so I came in and let her in, and she was like, okay, we're going to order food, whatever. I was like, bet. But I had my food in my car, and I was like, okay, well, after they order, I'm going to go sneak and eat my food. So I was in my car eating my food. And Jihad called me, and I told him, and I was like, yo, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm sneaking eating my food because I'm so hungry, and they order food. He was like, yeah, what's wrong with you? You ain't share your food? You're supposed to share your food. I was like, yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. There were things like that that really caught my attention about him, because
he's not afraid. And he said this one time, he's like, I'm not intimidated by your beauty. I'm not intimidated by your spirit. I love it. So.
Wow. So what would be one thing that you want people to know about your significant other?
Who's that for? Is that for me?
Yeah, that's for you.
Oh my God. Well,
I mean, we're on the radio, so you might as well let us know.
That's what I'm going to say. He's the realest of the real, period. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes. How about you, Chanel?
What's the question?
I said, what is one thing you want them to know about Anwar? Tell me.
He's a very nice person.
No, there's more to that.
He's a very nice person. He's a very nice person. He's a very nice person.
How about you, Tasha?
My man, my husband is the bomb.com. When I say that, he's like, man, that sounds so corny. He's like, that sounds so old. He's the bomb.com. Like, he's very fearless. He's drama just like me. He's petty just like me. And I love it. We definitely compliment each other. We definitely do. He's my man. You know what I mean? He's just fearless. And I love that in a man. He's very fearless. Like, he's very bold. And I love it about that.
That's what I'm talking about.
He's an agitator, and I love it. Because I'm an agitator. He just pumps me. That's what I love about my man. And he's with me all the way. And I look for it. Like, I don't care. He got my back against anybody. It's us against the world. That's what I love about my husband. He's like, if you're not fool with me, if you're not like you, not fool with me. Point blank, period.
Ladies, we gotta wrap it up, but before we do, I want to thank you ladies for coming on the show today, and I know the audience definitely wants to hear from you guys again, because I know we was talking about the good things, we ain't talking about the bad things, and I think that's an important topic to kind of touch on as well. But before we go, I do want to say that one thing that I want to add to this show is a jail call. Normally, people get like 15 minutes to do a jail call when they're talking to their loved one that's incarcerated. But for me, a jail call on Jail Talk is going to be a 15-minute call of action where I want to challenge people to learn and to be more aware about what's going on with this prison system. So I want to challenge those who are listening today to take 15 minutes out of your day. And I want you to learn about those who are serving life without parole in Pennsylvania, because a lot of people don't know. And I do have a hard fact. I got these statistics gathered from FAM, which is FAM is from Families Against Mandatory Minimums, and they are doing great work out there. Based on the average incarceration cost, the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, the DOC, is spending $220 million per year to incarcerate 3,892 people who have already served at least 20 years. The true cost is undoubtedly higher because incarceration costs increase dramatically as people age and need more medical care. So remember, you can't change what you don't know. Please keep us posted on some of the topics that you want to hear about. If you want to come on this show, let me know, because there's so many different conversations that we need to talk about when it comes to this prison system. And all these conversations are important. I do want to give a shout out. I want to say to anyone that is fighting for someone incarcerated, remember, you're not alone. We're here. We feel your pain and we feel your struggles. And to all of those that you ladies talked about today, we got Anwar, we got Jaha, we got Ronnie. You know, giving those men a special shout out as well, because they have these women here that are supporting them and are holding them down, but holding them down with love. And next week, we'll be back at 4 p.m. We got Suave up next. Suave Gonzalez and Kevin McCracken with DBI Live coming on next after this show. We'll be back next week.
bad boy, baby. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Who bigger the strong? Who got it going on? You're dead wrong. Who bigger the strong? Who got it going on?
Relax and take notes while I take totes of the smoke. Throw you in a choke, gun smoke, gun smoke. Biggie Smalls for mayor, the rap slayer, the layer, mother. Say your prayers. Hail Mary, full of grace. Smack the in the face. Take her Gucci back and a North Face off her back. Jab her if she act funny with the money. Oh, you got me mistaken, honey. I don't wanna rip ya. I just want the paper, the visa, Kavisha. I'm out like the vapors. Who's the one you call, Mr. Macho? The head honcho. Swift fist like Kumacho. I got so much style. I should be down with the stylistics. Make up to break up. Need to wake up. Smell the end. Beat you to a seizure. Then your mom's hit the skin to amnesia. She don't remember just the two hits. Her hitting the floor and me hitting the sucking on the had the begging for the and your mom's ain't ugly, love. My got rocked quick. I guess I was a combination of House of Pain and Bobby Brown. I was humping around and jumping around. After then I asked her who's the man. She said B-I-G. Then I bust in her E-Y-E.
Don't think you're dead wrong.
When I get, I like to spread the blood like mustard. Trust it, my hardcore rain leaves you rusted. Move over, Lucifer. I'm more ruthless. Leave you toothless. You're kipping. I flip it. Tears don't affect me. I hit them with the tech. G's disrespect me. My potency is deadly. I'm babies, no ifs, ands, or maybes. Hit mummy in the tummy if the play's a dummy. Slip the wrist a little stiff. After she sucked it, I stabbed a brother with the ice pick because he wanted me to come from the back. But Smalls don't get down like that. Found your father hiding in the room. Them with the broom. Slid him down the back and threw salt in the wound. Who you think you're dealing with? Anybody step into my path is feeling it. Hardcore, I got it.